Hello everyone, Danny here, and welcome to the It's All Cobblers to Me preview show. We'll be joined by Tom Lyons from Walsall's One Pod Beyond in a few minutes as we look ahead to Saturday's game at the Banks' Stadium. But first, Charles Commons, you're here.
Hello, yes I am, Danny.
And, hello. Back to midweek therapy again.
Yay!
Because we're going to quickly look back on Tuesday night's defeat to Barrow. How are you after that, Charles? I know before we were talking, before we started recording, you said it's like a hangover, but you haven't been drinking.
Yeah, I feel... I was so angry with the performance and with the result, obviously. And we're recording on Wednesday, and I genuinely just feel like that anger is still there. It feels like all of my energy has just gone. I maybe just threw it into like the shouting I did towards my iPhone as I watched on iFollow last night. It's that kind of, I'm drained by it. I'm drained by the performance, the result. I'm drained by Northampton Town Football Club as a whole.
Yeah. I think because we'd had such a good result on Saturday and a decent performance, we were all quite happy on the pod recording on Sunday. We then had deadline day, which was pretty positive, yeah. I thought. Like, we brought in Bez Labala, Louis Appert. By the way, if you want to catch our deadline day talk and go to a more positive pod, then it's on our website, I think, now, as Charles, isn't it?
It will be, yes.
So you'll be able to.
By the time this goes out, yeah.
Yeah, so you'll be able to go back and listen. I think we did an hour on Twitter Spaces, and now we're going to upload that to our website. So that was a much happier pod, but we'll try and be as positive as we can today, because that was absolutely dire last night. It was one of them that we just...
Alex Dyer,
yeah. Danny Dyer. We just couldn't...
If I say Danny Dyer again, does that count because it's the other one?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Danny Dyer.
Good. It was just one of them where we couldn't break him down, wasn't it? Like another. It was similar to the Crawley game where a team just came up, set themselves up. Fair play to them. Did their job completely right. Completely, game plan went completely to plan, and we just couldn't break them down. And I was just so frustrated the whole night. I just kind of shouting forwards at my laptop the entire time.
And yet it just stays there, doesn't it? Your laptop never moves. No. Forwards, move!
No, the ball didn't move either. Like Jack Sowerby with his sideways passes. And
I did. For me, it was very much a case of that. I think in today, looking back at it, you've got to give credit to Barrow because they came and did a job very, very well and, you know, really did a number on us. And I thought Jason Taylor, J-Bo, was incredible. I think
he did exactly what you expect J-Bo to do. And
absolutely. It was 100% a J-Bo performance and he loved every second of it. The point where him and John Brady had a bit of a spat with each other on the touchline. I mean, I loved it. I was like going, oh. And then I was torn. I felt torn. I was like, don't you touch John Brady. And then I went, but don't you touch J-Bo. How dare you? There was an element of just like, leave him alone. He's a title winner. He's a legend. He is. Leave him be.
But he's exactly the type of player that Barrow need right now, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't been playing that much. He just seemed to come in last night and just did a proper job on us. And he embodied what Barrow were in terms of like shutting up shop, nothing going past them. And honestly, I was surprised by them, by how organised they were. Because I just thought, and that's probably something to do with the psychology of how we approached it as well as a team, that I was just expecting us to roll over them. And that was obviously completely wrong. I should have known better, really. But
I think I said very very casually in the group, full of confidence, in the predictions thread on Slack, 9-0. Didn't age very well, did it?
We should know better by now, but it was dreadful. But anyway, to kind of hide that result, the club have put out the 125th anniversary shirt this morning, conveniently, just to kind of raise spirits again. Chocolate and blue, we kind of knew it was coming. It's going to be worn for the club's 125th birthday against Tranmere next month, March the 5th, and it's going to be next season's third kit. I love this. I don't know what you think, Charles, but I love this.
I am ready to throw all my money in the air and throw darts at it in the direction of Sixfield so that they can collect all the money and then give me a shirt in return.
Yes.
It's very nice.
It is very nice.
Really very nice. I was a bit, not concerned is the wrong word. I was wondering how they were going to do the names on the shirt because of the fact that you've got the light blue and then the darker color of the chocolate, because obviously to get names onto, you know, a dark color, then you're going to have to make the names light and vice versa. But it looks like what they've done is that they've only put the names on the light blue side, the which I think looks really smart. So can I just say that I don't quite know whether what I love more. Do I love the shirt or do I love Fraser Horsfall wearing the shirt? He is an attractive man.
He is. When you sent that picture, I thought, have we made a new signing out of the blue? But
out of the chocolate blue.
Out of the chocolate blue, yeah. But no, it's just something different, isn't it? I think we're going to see it a lot in away games next season. Probably for the rest of this season once it's out as well. It's something a bit special. And the names you're talking about is the names of the season ticket holders who donated their refunds from the lockdown season.
So yes, nice. We won't go into that. Just
no. dear. But anyway, that's enough of us. Let's get on to Walsall. To help us preview the trip to Walsall is Tom Lyons from One Pod Beyond. How are you doing, Tom?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, chaps. How's it going?
Yeah, it was all right until yesterday, until last night.
Until Tuesday.
Thankfully, we didn't have a game last night, so no. I was happy with that, to be honest.
Yeah. So this season, for you especially, Matt Taylor, obviously former Cobblers player. I think it was one season, wasn't it, Charles? Matt Taylor was
here? One season in League One. Yeah.
I think potentially drifting a little bit to the next one, but yeah. Untested as a manager, really, for the most part, and it's been a little bit of a struggle so far. Losing your last five games, is it?
Five games on the bounce, and I think we've won the charge sheet is 2 in the last 15 total.
Right?
So it's pretty grim at the moment.
Yeah.
That's a Walsall win coming then, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, the worst possible thing to say to us, isn't it? Is we're a great team to come and play if you're in a bad run of form, so I'm sure everything will be all right. how is Matt Taylor doing, overall?
I think he's in danger of losing the crowd, to be honest. There was positivity when he was announced as the new manager. It was something a little bit different after, obviously, he replaced Brian Dutton, who had himself replaced Daryl Clark halfway through last season after Clark jumped ship for Port Vale. And it was an interesting appointment. He was a bright up-and-coming manager. We'd heard good things from Spurs under-21s or the sort of, youth team that he'd been looking after. But at the same time, of course, he's very inexperienced. And I think that inexperience is starting to show, unfortunately. He's sort of wedded to this 4-2-3-1 system and shows absolutely no inclination to change it. And something does need to change, because we're not only are we on a terrible run, we look completely bereft of any idea of how to take control of a game. We're desperately lacking in creativity, and we've got very little threat up front. I mean, the game against Bristol Rovers at the weekend was a classic example. Rovers went down to 10 men after 40 minutes, and we still didn't create much. We still had one up top. We were still lumping balls up to poor old George Miller, who hasn't scored he scored one goal in 17 games. He scored recently, but that was a deflection that sort of went in off him. His confidence is desperately low, and the whole team looks shorn of confidence. And Taylor at the moment doesn't look like he knows how to change it.
Has anything changed during that five games? Has it just literally just been the same kind of performance?
I mean, yeah, we look sort of bereft of confidence, as I said. We've got very little creativity or cutting edge. When we do get chances, we tend to miss them. We missed some horrific... we should have been 3-0 up against Bradford at home. Miller missed an open goal from 4 or 5 yards. Actually put it, back to where it came from rather than in the direction of the goal. Connor Wilkinson, again, one of our sort of marquee players that we signed in the summer, who's sort of flattered to deceive all season, really. Missed a really good header, good save from the keeper, but he really should have scored. When we even do get in good positions, we don't look like we're going to make anything of it. And, of those marquee signings that we made in the summer, very few of them are making any sort of positive impact. I mean, Ash Taylor, who we signed as a centre half, who I think you may know yourselves.
We'll come on to him later. But
yeah. He's already left. So he's gone back up to Scotland, and we sort of released him from his 2-year contract to free up a bit of cash because he'd been pretty poor and obviously wanted to go. Joss Labadie, who we were excited about signing, is effectively a walking red card. He's got 9 yellows and a red already this season. He's one more yellow away from a suspension, and we'll almost certainly get it on Saturday because, you know, he's offering very little other than kicking people and picking up bookings at the moment. Stephen Ward's out for the season, it looks like, who was supposed to bring a bit of sort of experience at left back and who has largely been dreadful and is now as it looks like he's got a long-term injury. Manny Month was suspended for 7 games after a disciplinary issue last season when Tranmere were playing Forest Green, which apparently Walsall didn't even know about, which is pretty unforgivable. So we've been missing him for the last 5 or 6 games. He's got a 7-game ban to serve. And I've already kind of spoken about Connor Wilkinson, who's really, done very, very little. He's clearly a very technically gifted player, but his attitude just doesn't look great at the moment, and that goes for quite a few other players, unfortunately.
Can I just ask, Tom, with Matt Taylor, did he bring in an experienced assistant or first team coach or anything with him? I mean, because
he did, yeah. We've got Neil McDonald assisting him, who the former Blackpool manager, who's a very experienced number 2 and manager in his own right, but you hear very little from him. He's virtually completely silent, and there's no, possibly what's more worrying than that is there's no sort of evidence of a plan B. There's no evidence that McDonald has taken Taylor aside and said, look, Matt, it's not working. We need to try something different, whether it's 4-3-3, whether it's 4-4-2. We need to do something different because at the moment we're just in this desperate rut. And, apart from the personnel, very little is changing on the pitch.
I don't know how you feel about this, Danny, or Tom, in fact, but 4-3-2-1 or 4-2-3-1, either one of those, feels to me like it's the new 4-4-2, as in every team has to play it. And it's like, that's the format. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's, the formation that essentially we played in 2015-16 when we won League Two, and it did us okay. But it feels like maybe it's past its sell-by date already, and that so many teams are now just, it's almost like a template that every team has to stick to and at least try. And then there is that sense of, well, if we change and we try something different, then we're sticking our neck out on the line, whereas we could just go with the flow of what everybody else does and just hope we've got better players, essentially, than the other team.
I think as well, there's a sense that if you've come from a very successful youth setup like Tottenham, then you can implement that style and sort of, mould the players around it. And, if you come 7th or 8th in your league of 10, it's not the end of the world. But when you're struggling with it for a team threatened by the trapdoor of relegation into the National League, you've got to try and change something. And there's no sense that, as you say, it's a very fashionable formation, but he seems completely wedded to it and completely bereft of ideas of how to change, with the players that he's got at his disposal. And the results that we've been getting, which, something has got to change.
Mm-hmm. How deep does it actually go to you, do you think, to the fans think? Because you've got Jamie Fullerton in there as technical director. was that something, was that a new position or was that something that he just replaced somebody?
Yeah, no, it was brand new. It was, I think the chairman, Lee Pomlett, felt he got his fingers burnt with Clark. There was very much an element of jilted lover about it. I think, you know, he had brought, put all his eggs into the Clark basket and then Clark just upped and left in January. Because I think Clark felt, you know, this is only going one way. After we sold Elijah Adebayo, who obviously is now absolutely, you know, ripping up trees in the championship. I think once we sold him in January last year, he could see the writing on the wall and thought, you know, this is not going to look good on my CV. And to be fair to him, he's actually doing okay at Port Vale, which again leads fans to think, you know, maybe it's not this long list of managers we've had over the last 15 years who've, you know, Dean Smith aside, done very little. Maybe there's something structurally wrong at the club, you know, and those are the sorts of questions that are being asked at the moment. So to go back to your original question, I think Fullerton, or possibly not Fullerton, but, you know, the idea of having a technical director of football was a good one, because I think Pomlett felt that there weren't enough football people at the club. But unfortunately, I think Fullerton's strategy was to pack the spine with experience and players he could count on, you know, Ward, Wilkinson, Month, Labadie and Taylor. And, you know, they've shown very little between them. And as a result, other players in the squad have had to pick up the slack. And I don't think they're, you know, I don't think they're up to it, to be brutally honest. If you've got your sort of five main marquee signings underperforming, it puts a lot of onus on the other players who, you know, probably weren't that good to start with. So then you're scrabbling around for results, which is what we're doing and looks like we're going to be doing for the end of the season.
And transfer window wise, have you done enough this month, do you think?
I mean, we had a talk about this sort of with some of our people on Twitter, Walsall fans on Twitter, because we sort of said, we summed up the transfer window by saying it looks like the same strategy that we had last January, which was to, we had a cushion of about 10 points to the bottom two, and it looked like we were going to be very conservative and just see if we could scrape through the rest of the season and avoid the bottom two, which last season we just about managed to do. This season, the signings look slightly better, potentially, certainly up front where we've brought in Devante Rodney, who had a pretty good season at Port Vale last season, but hadn't really done anything this season. So it's a new start for him. Other than that, we've really been struggling at centre-back through, you know, Taylor leaving and Month being suspended. So we've brought in Donovan Daniels from Crewe, who's pretty experienced and started off really well in his first game against Bradford, but then had a bit of a howler that gifted Bristol Rovers a last-minute winner on Saturday. And then to replace Ward, we've brought in Reece Devine from Man United, who's a sort of young youth teamer who's been out on various loans and has obviously only played one game so far, so the jury's out on him. But yeah, I mean, certainly not a great window. Probably more players went out than actually came in. And again, it looks like, as I say, we're hoping that we can just limp to the end of the season and hope that there are two worse teams.
Yeah, Otis Khan was one that I was a bit surprised by to see leave. Because I've always quite liked him as a player. Was he just not getting in?
I don't know if you can broadcast this.
okay.
but there is, I won't go into details, but there is a very strong rumour about the reason that he left. And it's to do with the contract that Walsall wanted him to sign as opposed to the contract that Leighton Orient offered him. Okay. So I won't say any more than that, but effectively we wanted to sign Khan. And I think the rumours are that Khan wanted to sign. He'd done pretty well. He's the one sort of creative spark that we've really had this season, even though he wasn't here for very long. He only signed sort of halfway through October. But obviously he's chosen to go to Orient. And now we look very, very light in that sort of, that creative, number 10 role, or even, you know, coming in from the wing, cause, that's what he was good at. You could play him in quite a few different positions, but he would give you a bit of a spark, and it's that spark that we're desperately missing at the moment.
You've conceded 14 goals in the last 15 minutes of your game so far this season, Tom. Is that a fitness issue that you're seeing? I mean, one thing that, you know, we remember, we had Matt Taylor at the end of his playing career, and the one thing that I know I was quite vocal about being against him was his aging. You could tell his fitness wasn't quite there. He wasn't really the player that he had been back when we got to watch him banging those silly, ridiculous goals in on Match of the Day for Portsmouth and things. I mean, is it maybe an element of the fact that he's kind of gone, fitness just isn't there for you, and it's almost like he's replicating the end of his playing career?
I think fitness was certainly something fans were concerned about at the start of the season. There was definitely a sense in the first few months of the season that we were off the pace, that we weren't, you know, we weren't able to last a full game. I think since then, probably there's a myriad of other issues sort of contributing to it now. I mean, we're absolutely awful at defending set pieces. We're no threat from set pieces, and we can't defend them, which is a pretty lethal combination, and should be basically the first thing on your tick sheet if you're setting up a team to be effective, even half effective in League Two.
That's basically the only thing on our tick list in terms of scoring goals. So that may be quite happy. That's exciting.
Yeah. So, I mean, and also the fact that we always look like we've got a mistake in us, you know, as against Bristol Rovers, you know, 10 men, the goalkeeper comes out to claim a ball. The centre-back dithers. The centre-back tries to head it to him, heads it past him, and Bristol Rovers score. So, I think we're mentally weak as much as we're physically weak, to be honest.
Going forwards at the other end, I really like, you were talking about your creative spark being lost. Jack Earing is someone I really like as a player. Could he potentially bring that? Is he more deep? I know he sometimes plays deep, sometimes breaks forward a little bit.
He's been playing deeper this season, yeah. We were excited because we thought he was a classic number 10 in the sort of vein of, you know, all those great number 10s we've had over the last decade, from sort of Romain Sawyers through to Honos Tuma. And we've definitely been missing that. Earing's been played in the two of the 4-2-3-1 more often than not this season. He has occasionally played a bit further forward, but doesn't seem to. I think his confidence has probably taken a knock, to be honest. He's playing in a really poor team. And he's probably been one of the better players this season, but performances recently have just dropped off a little bit. And I think now there's with Liam Kinsella and Josh Labadie are sort of very, very similar players. You know, they're sort of ball winners, players who are going to break up attacks and then pass it on to someone else who can actually do something with the ball. Earing, theoretically, should be that kind of player. But this season, when he's been played in the number 10 role, we've had kind of high hopes for him, and it hasn't quite happened. So, but he's still very young. So, you know, hopefully he's one of those players who can still evolve and won't be scarred by the experience of playing in this team this season.
So what's a good season now? You're 14 points off the playoffs. Is it basically, like you were saying before, it's just all about survival, or any kind of outside hopes of doing a Mansfield and storming up the league, or
no? I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, yeah, staying up is the number one, priority. I was on a Radio WM, the sort of local BBC radio station, the other week, and the presenter, I think we were equally, it was an equal number of points off the playoffs and relegation. And the presenter asked me if I thought we could still make the playoffs. And I said I was looking down the table rather than up it. And unfortunately, that's proved to be absolutely correct. And I think all of us are now looking down, because this season is following exactly the same pattern as last season. That's what worries people, where we ended up having to go to, you know, Southend and Grimsby, the two teams that got relegated, and get a result. We managed to draw both of those games just. I mean, we were very, very lucky, to be honest. We could easily have lost both of those games, and it would have been a lot closer than it could have been. But already fans are looking at the games against Scunthorpe and Oldham and thinking, right, we just got to go there and not lose. That's the whole point. We've got Scunthorpe next Tuesday, and it's a huge game, you know. And unfortunately, that's the mentality of fans now is looking at, you know, when we're mathematically safe rather than anything else. I think the other thing we might like to see apart from that is just evidence that Taylor is learning, and, you know, he's got the rest of the season now to get together with the rest of his coaches, work out a different system, work out what are the best players to play that system. And I think as long as fans can see some evidence that he can see there's a problem and that things need changing, he may get, you know, a bit more buy-in from the fans. Because at the moment, you know, the spirits at the club are really, really low. And I genuinely worry if we go 1-0 down on Saturday, I think the atmosphere could very, very quickly get pretty poisonous. I mean, at the end of the Bristol Rovers game on Saturday, there's footage doing the rounds on social media of a guy who gets very calmly gets out of his sort of seat or off the terrace at Bristol Rovers at the side of the away dugout and goes and talks to Taylor and explains to him that it's terrible and that you should not be losing 1-0 in the last minute to a team who've been playing with 10 men, you know, for 50 minutes. And that guy, like I say, was pretty calm. He wasn't ranting or raving. He was telling Taylor that this is basically unacceptable. Of course, he was led away by stewards and Taylor was very, you know, calm himself. It wasn't a heated argument or anything. But I fear that on Saturday, if we do go a goal down, then it's going to get pretty poisonous pretty quickly.
I've literally just been looking through sort of your history in terms of your league position, and I've always sort of thought of Walsall as being, and this has confirmed it for me, more of a League One club. You've essentially spent 75, I think this is, years in the third division, whether that be called the third division or League One. Obviously, this is now your second season in League Two. And looking back at it, there's almost been a little bit of a decline. So since 2015-16, when you finished third and in the playoffs in League One, you've then slowly gone down the league table and then down the pyramid. So 14th, 19th, then got relegated in 18-19. 12th in League Two last season and currently sat in 19th place. Is there, you're talking there about the fact that fans might start and are actually starting to get on the back of the management team, but what about the ownership of the football club? How's that being perceived by the fans at the moment?
Well, if you've got a couple of hours, I can talk you through the long and depressing history of the ownership of Walsall ever since we moved to the new stadium, basically, which was in itself something shrouded in controversy. We basically built a stadium that was the same as Scunthorpe's and paid twice as much as Scunthorpe did to a variety of companies with mysterious links to various directors. But that's another story. Unfortunately, what that means is that for the last 30 years, we've been effectively paying to play in our own stadium. So we built a new stadium that we never actually owned. And we released our accounts this week, which showed that finally the cumulative cost of paying for both the ground and our training ground built by the previous chairman now exceeds £500,000 a year. So effectively, that is a huge drain on us even before we've kicked a ball every season. Now, funnily enough, you talk about us being an established League One club, which is exactly right. We've played more games in Division 3 than any other team in history. You know, that is absolutely our level. We're sort of the archetypal League One club, or we used to be, because what's become clear over, you know, recent seasons is that we are simply not in a position to compete at that level anymore. And a lot of fans are starting to question why that is, because, you know, we have, even in League One, we had one of the best turnovers financially of any team in the league. You know, we make quite a lot of money. But what people want to know is why isn't that reflected in the team that goes out on the pitch? Mm. So we're very good at diversifying. You know, we have a huge conference business. We have loads of events that go on throughout the season. There's a market on the car park every Sunday. We once had to close the top tier of our stand on the opening day of the season because we double booked it with a wedding. which is great. You know, that's absolutely what lower league clubs have to do. We've got a giant advertising board that overlooks the M6, which you've probably seen if you've driven past it. We own that and get the revenue from that. But none of this seems to be reflected in the team that we're able to put out on the pitch. And there's no doubt now that we are absolutely a sort of mid to lower table League Two club now. That's what the last couple of seasons show us. It's there in black and white in the table. And as I said before, we've started to think, well, maybe it's not all these managers that we've had. You know, I think in the last 15 seasons, in only two of those 15 seasons, have we improved on our position from the previous season. Mm. So it has been, you know, a steady decline. And people are starting to say, well, you know, maybe it's not the manager. Maybe it's not the players. Maybe it's the people who've been here for those 15 years in the boardroom. Now, Jeff Bonser, who used to own the club and who still is the club's landlord and gets that £500,000 every single season on a property which we still have to pay the upkeep on, by the way. We pay all the costs for upkeep and repairs and all that kind of thing. Or his pension fund is just sent a check for £500,000 every season, whatever. He left a couple of years ago, and there was a transition to another board member, Lee Pomlett, who I've already mentioned. Mm. And there was a lot of goodwill for Pomlett, I think largely because he wasn't Jeff Bonser. And he, you know, he did things that Bonser was incredibly reclusive, would speak to the fans once every 5 or 6 years, basically to berate them for, you know, whatever shortcomings he felt they were guilty of. Pomlett's much more of a communicator, but unfortunately at the moment that appears to be the only difference, because, you know, the chief exec is still the same, the club secretary is still the same, the people who run the club are still the same. Even he was a board member, he wasn't a completely new person who came in. And so people are starting to question whether this was a genuine new broom or whether it was just a continuation of the old regime that had been slightly rebranded. So yeah, we're not happy bunnies at the moment. And you know, we don't think we have any divine right to be anywhere in the league, despite, you know, our natural position, as you say, generally being in the third division. But at the moment, it's just dispiriting because it's decline, you know, on and off the pitch. The stadium itself has seen better days, but of course we're still paying all that money to play there every season. So it's not a happy fan base at the moment, to put it mildly.
What would you come up with, or what do the fans think would be the things that would change all of that, do you think?
Well, Lee Pomlett's great sort of objective is to reunite the club with the freehold so that the club once again owns its own ground, which would be a great start. He says that's ongoing and discussions with Jeff Bonser are ongoing, and it's something that will hopefully happen within the next sort of 3 or 4 years. That's the timescale he's put on it. But until then, I think there just needs to be change at the top of the club. They need new ideas. You know, your fans will come to the Banksy Stadium on Saturday and there will be nowhere to have a drink. You know, that I think they might have a couple of taps in the away end, but you know, there are no pubs near the ground. There was a social club that has now closed because it was in such a state of disrepair, and they haven't reopened it. So it's not a pleasant place to go and watch football. There's no reason to go and watch a game at Walsall unless you actually support them. For sort of floating fans, you're much better off going to a local non-league game where, you know, you can have a pint watching the pitch and, you know, it's a tenner to get in. And you can have a laugh with your mates. At Walsall, for the floating supporter or the next generation of supporter, there is very little to get you excited. You know, there's we have a horrific history of, you know, awful catering, terrible beer. And, you know, fans have shown these days that, you know, that's not what they want. You know, they want stuff like Accrington have got, where, you know, you've got a fantastic supporters bar and, you know, historically a much smaller club than Walsall, are kind of getting people in because they want to go and experience something and have a, you know, something nice to eat, something nice to drink, maybe a bit of music or a bit of, you know, a bit of something to do to make you go there an hour before the game. Whereas most Walsall fans and most away fans, if they've got any sense, will get to the ground. You know, they'll eat and drink in Birmingham or in the middle of Walsall, and then they'll get the train or the bus or whatever to the ground 10 minutes before and then walk in. You know, it's not a place that you want to go. And that's the main thing that needs to change. They need to do something to, you know, re-engage with supporters who have either got fed up of it or are looking for something a little bit different than the Premier League and Championship games they can go to within, you know, there are four Premier League and Championship teams within a 10-mile radius of Walsall. So you have to offer something different. And at the moment, the reason it's different is because it's worse. You know, it's worse than those teams. So why would you go unless you'd, like my son, been brought up as a Walsall fan? And at the moment, it feels like that's a, you know, you feel almost feel guilty for sort of getting your kids to support them. I mean, there have been horrific stories shared on social media of people who say, you know, I've been taking the kids for 4 or 5 years and they just don't want to go anymore. You know, they're fed up of watching a team lose in a, you know, a soulless corrugated steel stadium underneath the M6. You know, it's not a happy place.
So obviously a lot of stuff to unpack there, and we just need to kind of finish off with a couple of quick fire questions that some of our listeners will probably come and hunt us down if we don't ask. So it's probably going to change the subject completely, but a couple of quick fire ones. Firstly, why did you let Liam Roberts go? Because he's been one of our players of the season. So
it had just really gone stale for Roberts, and I'm pretty glad that he's doing well there. I mean, you know, nobody harboured any sort of ill will about him going. I think he'd been playing in a poor team for, you know, 2 or 3 seasons. I think his confidence had taken a knock, and it was probably just the right thing for us to part ways. I mean, you know, we've had, you know, more than one player over the last few years who, you know, has been poor for us and then gone on to do really well elsewhere. I mean, Dan Scar is a good example, who's, you know, done fantastically well for Plymouth in League One after being released by us. And Roberts was another of those who clearly had talent, but was just, you know, his confidence was so low after playing in a poor team and he just needed a new start.
Yeah. Secondly, another ex-player of ours, you mentioned him earlier, and I almost spit out my water, and I'm sure a lot of listeners did, when you said marquee signing Ash Taylor. Can I just get a very quick sentence on Ash Taylor from you, please?
Yeah, he came in and he just wasn't very good, unfortunately. I think, you know, we were warned, but you sort of, I think sometimes League Two fans forget what an average standard the Scottish Premier League is. And we all, you know, we saw, oh, he's been up at Aberdeen and, you know, playing in the Scottish Premier League. And no, he was terrible. There was one game at Hartlepool where it was genuinely one of the worst performances I've seen from a centre half. I think he was responsible for 2 goals and it could have been 4 or 5. And he was sort of bombed out of the lineup after that and featured pretty rarely, to be honest. Hence him upping sticks back up to Scotland again.
Yeah. Did you write a lovely message of goodbye that his wife appreciated?
His wife was a bit grumpy about about his time in the Midlands. There were rumours that because he'd failed a COVID test earlier in the week, and then by Friday he was signing for Kilmarnock. So it was all a bit strange. And a few people sort of called him out and said, you know, this is a bit weird. You failed a COVID test, but you've managed to sign for a team in Scotland. And then his wife waded into it and it all got a bit ugly. So, we'll probably leave that one there.
Finally, to put to bed something that Jeffy was asking our co-presenter. She remembers an orange kebab shop near your stadium. Is that a thing or has she just completely made it up?
An orange kebab shop?
Yeah, she reckons it's orange and it was right next to your stadium.
There's nothing next to the stadium apart from
this was when she was 11, I think, so it was only maybe okay. 2 years ago, Charles.
two years ago, yeah.
there's the retail part, but I don't think they have a kebab shop. I don't really I don't think I've ever had a kebab before the game, so maybe I come from a different route that doesn't go past the orange kebab shop, but I'll put it out on Twitter and see if anyone remembers it.
Yeah,
were they fond memories or
Oh, she loved it. Raved about it for about half an hour on a podcast. Okay. It was that was an interesting edit.
Should we move on to predictions, Charles? Have you got a jingle for predictions?
Oh, we've got loads of prediction jingles.
Excellent.
We'll go with this one because it was the first one that came in. This is from Roz.
Great preview pods are on the way, hopefully this time to stay. Will we win or lose or draw? What will be the final score? Other things to talk about? When will our Bernie get a shout? How many long balls will be kicked? Will there be any pockets picked? A board draw or a real ding-dong? You could be right, you could be wrong. But either way, let's have some fun. It's prediction time, so get them done.
So, predictions. Thank you, Roz, for that. Predictions. Charles, I'll come to you first for predictions.
I predict...
It's not ready. Didn't have it ready, did you?
I didn't have it ready. No, I was too busy faffing around with other things. Going back to what Tom said right at the very beginning, which was about form and about set pieces, I think we'll score, but I also think we're going to lose. I think it'll be 2-1. Defeat. I'm still feeling really downbeat.
Yeah.
That is the only thing that I can say to justify my actions here. A 2-1 defeat against Walsall.
Okay. Tom, how are you feeling about this one?
I often get the mickey taken out of me for being far too positive on our own podcast, you know, predicting us to finish 12th, things like that. But usually I can find some sort of glimmer of light that says we might nick a draw or something like that. I suppose if he plays Devante Rodney and he turns out to be, you know, the missing link up front, then, you know, we might be able to get something out of the game. But that's probably my heart speaking. My head says we'll lose 2-0.
So, yeah, I'm going to go for a 1-0 win, I think, from a set piece, from a John Guthrie header, from a set piece.
Nice.
I'm going to go for.
From a Liam Roberts long kick.
Yeah. Maybe it's 0-0 going up to the end and Liam Roberts charges forward for a corner.
Yeah, that
heads in the winner.
Absolutely go to form for this season, I think.
Yeah. Great stuff. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Tom, where can we find your pod?
One Pod Beyond. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and also SoundCloud, and you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook as well.
Good stuff. You can check that out. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Charles.
Well, thank you, Danny. You've cheered me up immensely.
Good stuff. Next week, God help us, we're going to go and try and find a Port Vale fan. So,
good luck with that.
We'll see if they listen to this episode or not. But apart from that, Thanks very much. We'll be back on Tuesday with your usual show of joy. See you then.